Hello, dear listeners. Cormac here from the editing studio. Normally, I'd be here telling you about what the graduate student writers of astrobytes.org publish every day and how we sit down to bring them together. But today, something else you wouldn't expect. Will, Kirsten and I got a bit sidetracked while recording episode 88, and it was too good not to share with you all. We call it our St. Patrick's Day special, The Shamrock Shake-Up. You'll be joining us just as we wrap up a discussion about luck. Make sure to listen to episode 88 next week to catch it in full. Agus, lá éile pádraig faoi bhaise libh go léir.
But what I'm trying to get at here is, no matter how successful you think someone is, that person's always looking to someone they see as more successful. And even the most successful person in the world will look up and say, I wasn't as successful as this person who is dead.
So I guess Will's message is that no matter how much we achieve in astronomy, we'll never be satisfied. But one thing that can satisfy is the Shamrock Shake. So in the spirit of this American McDonald's mint creation, we're going to do the Shamrock Shake-Up, where we're going to talk about Irish astronomy tidbits, facts, things you may not know, or maybe wish you never found out. So the first one of these... Now, believe it or not, now Ireland is not the best place in the world to do astronomy observationally, right? The weather isn't very good. You get about 60 useful nights a year. This didn't stop Lord Rosse of Parsonstown from building the world's largest telescope. In 1845, with a 6-foot diameter, the Leviathan of Parsonstown saw first light. And it was the world's largest telescope from 1845 until 1917.
Wow. Yeah.
Pretty cool, right?
If there's a will, there's a way. I wonder how many good pictures it took.
Oh, it didn't even take pictures. It was...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Duh.
At least
duh.
I don't think it did.
They didn't have those.
Yeah. In fact, the famous discovery was that this is kind of debated, but the first observations of what would now understood be as galaxies, because before the smaller telescopes, they were just kind of nebulae and they were a bit fuzzy and people were arguing over what they would be. But M51, the Whirlpool Galaxy, was the first to be properly observed with this. And so there's a famous drawing that Lord Rosse made himself by hand, a sketch of the Whirlpool Galaxy.
You would be able to make... images at this point. They had photographic plates toward the, I mean, definitely toward the end of the period where this was the largest telescope.
And there was a time it was out of use. Yeah.
Right.
Like it was the biggest in that they didn't build a bigger one, but towards the end, I think towards the 1880s after, it was kind of inactive, if I'm not mistaken, but it was still technically the biggest because no one had built a bigger one yet.
Mm.
So I have a fun anecdote about a connection to this telescope. Mm-hmm. And to where it was built, which is Birr Castle. So we're going to go down a little rabbit hole here. And if at any point you lose track of how we got to where we're going, you're not alone. This took me some time to track down.
Okay.
So one of my closest childhood friends, his late grandfather's second wife's late third husband had a very interesting Whoa. Family.
This sounds like a real Irish story. Yeah.
Say that again.
So my friend's late grandfather's second wife's late third husband.
Okay.
So my friend is technically not related to these people. And it's interesting because he had a number of interactions with them growing up and still does. His step-grandmother is very much a part of his life, even though they're not blood related. Well, actually, they're not related at all, right? Well, I don't know about that one. Even though they're not blood related. So she... Yeah, the details aren't important. But my friend's step-grandmother remarried after his grandfather died to a very interesting family that he's still connected with, my friend. And I've gotten to meet them as well. They're fascinating people. And they're descendant from Irish nobility on the mother's side. The lineage goes all the way back to the famous St. George family, which had a peerage in Ireland and served in Parliament many centuries ago. And then on the father's side, they're descendant from a U.S. steel magnate who made the family very rich. So it's a fascinating family history. And one of the people that we've met has actually written a book about this. So he's published his family history. It's fascinating. So on his grandmother's heritage side, the Irish side of the family, they go back to a long way to the St. George's. And one of the children of his ancestor married into the Parsons family, but did not have blood descendants. So she married a widower Parsons who already had children from his first marriage. And that lineage is the lineage that produced William Parsons, the Earl of Ross, who was an astronomer who built the Leviathan of Parsonstown. And that lineage is extant to the present day. Now, funny enough, there's a Wikipedia page that lists all of the Parson descendants. Starting from 1637, every alternate generation is named either Lawrence or William. And this goes on to the present day. The most recent heir is born in 2008, the grandchild of the current Earl of Ross. And his name is William. He was born to Lawrence, who was born to William, who was born to Lawrence, back 12, 13 generations, which is madness. And it's kind of convenient, but I have no idea who's who when looking at this Wikipedia page.
Wait, they don't have numbers behind their names?
No, because they're not, like, there's no William born to a William. So it's not like William Jr., William the Third. It's William born to Lawrence, born to William, born to Lawrence, born to William, born to Lawrence.
That is crazy.
Well, they do number them.
Now, here it gets crazier. Some of the Lawrences are spelled with U's and some are spelled with W. Okay, now that may be crazy, but it's almost less crazy than the St. George family, because the first of the Baron St. Georges was, of course, named George St. George, because why not? Now, he didn't have any sons, so his peerage didn't get handed down. However, his grandson remade the peerage and was, of course, named St. George St. George. So you have St. George St. George, the grandson of Sir George St. George. So the Wikipedia page says, George St. George, 1st Baron St. George, not to be confused with St. George St. George, 1st Baron St. George. It's like, how is that not to be confused with? Like, in what world is this not confusing?
Oh, good grief. Yeah.
So we're down in the depth of the rabbit hole here. I hope you enjoyed. In any way, somehow my friend is connected into this family through, like, I don't know, like 70 marriages. But it's interesting because they had the largest telescope in the world.
So thank you for that anecdote, Will. And, you know, there is still a connection to astronomy in Birr, because they built a LOFAR station there. So LOFAR is a low-frequency radio telescope, and it's got a very, very large baseline all over Europe. So they've got some core stations in the Netherlands, and they have stations stretching all the way from Birr, right next to the castle, actually on Lord Ross's grounds. He gave them the use of the land for free. And it goes as far as Bulgaria now, I think. So they've got a very, very wide baseline. And I was lucky enough as a high school intern to actually be out there for a week and to help out. And I got to fix the last antenna before they turned it on, because the night before a deer jumped through a fence and bit through a cable.
What?
Whoa. That's so cool.
What are the odds of that? Why would a deer do that?
Well, there were deer on the estate. They're just they tried building a higher fence.
Come on. Deer now. Deer are kind of a nuisance.
They really are.
That's the first of the Shamrock Shake-Up factoids. So another one we have. So we're all astronomers here, right? How many of you have heard of NGC objects? I would say hands up, but this is a podcast. Okay, definitely. So
my hand is up.
Yeah, two hands are up. And what about IC?
No, not familiar with IC.
I don't think so.
Okay, so there are some objects that are IC somethings, like IC-10 is an interesting starburst galaxy. So I'll start with the NGC. So NGC stands for New General Catalogue, and it was actually compiled in Ireland by Jean-Louis Emile Dreyer, who was the director at Armagh Observatory. So he was Danish by birth, but he spent a lot of time working in Ireland, including as director in Armagh.
And you're going to claim him?
Well, the work was done in Ireland, or at least, you know, most of the work. He was compiling results from previous people as well, but he also did a lot of observations, including with the Leviathan of Parsonstown, which we just discussed. So, yeah, I guess we can kind of claim him. It was astronomy in Ireland, maybe not astronomy by an Irish person per se, but he liked it enough to stick around.
So the wildest thing that you've said here is what NGC actually stands for, because I don't know what I thought that it stood for, but definitely not New General Catalogue.
Yeah, so around the time that they were doing this in the late 1800s, they wanted a better catalogue because there was a whole bunch of smaller catalogues kind of scattered. So observations by people like Herschel that were good, but they weren't really compiled. There wasn't an authoritative list of stuff that we'd seen. So, you know, there were, for example, the Messier objects. There were different catalogues. And so he put them all together and he mm-hmm. did a bit of observing himself. And they just called it the New General Catalogue because it was a general catalogue of everything and it was new.
That's a good name. Another one of these fun facts is, Kirsten, I'm sure you've heard of HD as a prefix for stars and then a number.
Yeah.
You know what that stands mm-hmm. for?
Oh, don't tell me it's something lame.
It's Henry Draper. Yep.
Really?
Yep.
I'm going to start looking these up. I need like a whole list of what these things actually mean.
There's a professor in my department who is known for, on the oral examination, their qualifying exam, the first thing he'll do is go up to the chalkboard and write the 10 most popular acronyms of these catalogs and then ask you what they each stand for.
No.
He was not on my committee.
I would fail. I would absolutely fail.
It's kind of torturous. It seems unnecessary. But yeah, they're not what you expect.
So speaking of things you don't expect, we're going to jump to another Shamrock Shakeup.
Hit us.
So this isn't something we talk about a lot here, but we may be talking about it more in future. Ground-based gamma ray astronomy. People heard of Veritas, Magic, Hess. I see some heads vaguely nodding. So now, I don't know too much about the history of the field, but according to a webpage from the CFA in Harvard, the what they call father of ground-based gamma ray astronomy, Trevor Weeks, an Irishman.
Oh, really?
Well, there you go.
I didn't know that until a few weeks ago when one of my supervisors, who is Irish, said to me, oh, yeah, you know, there's Trevor Weeks. I said, who? And then I did a bit of Googling. I thought, oh, that's interesting. So, yeah, apparently at the time they were trying to build some ground-based gamma ray detectors to detect Cherenkov radiation, so flashes when particles into the atmosphere, and it didn't work. And a whole bunch of people fled to infrared astronomy, which was much more promising at the time, and he didn't, and he stuck with it, and Veritas popped out, and now we also have Magic and Hess. So, well done, Trevor.
Wow.
Thank you for sticking with it.
Cool.
Oh, I'm so excited for the next one.
So, we couldn't talk about Irish astronomy without talking about Jocelyn Bell Burnell, who we all know discovered pulsars, or at least we should know, discovered pulsars. For that discovery, her PhD supervisor was given the Nobel Prize. So what do we think of that? We're recording the day after International Women's Day, so particularly relevant.
Yeah, that one hurts my feelings.
Well, she's actually known for saying that there are some downsides to winning the Nobel, including you don't get any more prizes afterwards.
Oh, really?
So I guess she's got a positive view on it.
All right, let's move along. What other Shamrock Shakeup do we have?
We have one last one, right? So here's a fact you probably didn't know. Did you know that the first day ever was October the 22nd, 4004 BC?
What?
Did you guys know this? Is this something you're familiar with?
No.
Okay, so back in the 17th century, people were trying to find out when the Earth started, right? Because people want to know, that's kind of an important thing, you know, sort of like the way we look at the Big Bang, it was their equivalent of the beginning of everything. And their major source was biblical texts. So even Isaac Newton did this. So in case we get ideas about this not being scientific, for its time it was considered extremely scientific. And we should just be aware of that.
Okay. Yeah, don't forget, 2/3 of the Principia was theological.
Also, the majority of geology and geophysics was largely based on biblical text as well, in terms of like when they were looking at rocks and stuff, like for Noah's flood, they were actively trying to find evidence of that. And it was considered perfectly normal. It wasn't considered anything unscientific, right?
And then we get real science as a result of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In fact, I've seen the place where Noah's Ark was meant to have landed, Mount Ararat, when I was going to Armenia last year. But
cool.
Anyway, so the first ever day was October 22nd, 4004 BC, according to the Usher chronology, as published by James Usher, Primate of All Ireland, in 1650. What a job title, first of all.
That's cool. Yeah, I think what he did was string together the ages of all the people in the Bible and try to connect a genealogy. But as we know, especially in the Old Testament, those ages are a little ridiculous. Everybody lives to like, what?
200?
600 years or 200 years? I don't know. They live a long time, suspiciously, and there was some debate as to maybe there was a different way of accounting for years back then, or you get an extra 10 years if you have a kid. I don't know. There's some weird stuff with those numbers, but yeah, this idea of the earth being 6,000 years old was not really so biblical. It kind of came out of nowhere.
Well, it's still one of the founding texts of young earth creationism. There's some communities in Northern Ireland still who believe the earth is 6,000 years old.
Interesting.
Oh boy.
It's very relevant.
Hmm.
Well, thank you for all of those fun facts.
You're most welcome.
This was very fun. I had a blast in this Shamrock Shakeup.
I think we should do more episodes like this where we just, I don't know, we kind of go into, maybe it's still astronomy, but it's a bit more, I don't know, it's not quite beyond because they're about like kind of important, serious things. This is like funny, not so serious things. Can we go beyond? There's actually an Irish expression, whenever I would drive my mother mad, she'd say, Cormac, you're driving me beyond the beyond. Maybe that's what we could call these in the future.
That's funny.
Anyway.
That concludes the Shamrock Shakeup St. Patrick's Day special of Astro Soundbites. Make sure to catch the rest of episode 88 next week. And you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, Audible, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. And don't forget to drink a pint today.
I almost want this fun fact to be a mini episode that goes out on St. Patrick's Day. Just the story, just a mini episode.
We could do that.
Yeah, we could do that.
It would be hilarious.
All right, this is a monstrosity of an episode.